Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the Matt and Shaheen podcast. Shaheen, we've got something special this time.
Today is amazing.
I can't wait.
I know, I feel like we say this on every episode, but we just keep getting better and better.
This one's a special one.
Yeah. We got invited out. This is our first non-zero, like, in the office podcast.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, we got to venture out. A bit of a field trip.
A field trip. Matt and Shaheen field trip to the mean streets of London.
The big smoke.
Yeah. So what do we do?
So we went to go see David Breer, the founder and managing director of 11FS,
yeah.
Digital bank consultancy, shaking things up in the industry, basically helping banks get from where they are now to delivering cloud-based digital solutions to their clients.
So we've got a nice little two-parter. Part one, which is this podcast here, we're going to go over a bit about the state of business today, a bit about the competitive landscape. And then part two, we're going to dive into challenger banks and really the whole challenge of change just in all kinds of industries. So it's going to be insane. Like, I can't wait for you guys to hear this one.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, David dropped some absolute knowledge bombs.
Blew my tiny mind.
Should we dive into it?
Yeah, let's just do it.
All right, here's David from 11FS, part one.
I guess we'll start. How are you doing, David?
Super good. Busy day, but yeah, really, really, really good one. Do you know what? I literally, like, 4-day weekend, so, like, I've come back feeling, like, rejuvenated and whatnot, so I'm all good to go. How are you guys doing?
Good. Very, very good. Yeah, it's first day back's a bit of a struggle always, but again, yeah, 4-day weekend was good. Hung out a bit, had a barbecue with family.
Nice.
Few beers,
yeah,
and then yeah, just trolling through the day.
100%, yeah, sunshine over Easter, we were blessed, right? So just beers, barbecue, family, it was great. Yeah, yeah, so today was a bit of a shock, right?
Do you know the amount of comments I've had on, like, the fact I have a tan, like, which is really not going to be good for your podcast listeners, I'm going to say, but definitely, I'm feeling that kind of, like, summer glow the going glow. On.
It's rocking it, I mean, yeah.
I mean, I guess just, like, from a our target market's accountants and bookkeepers and people who run accounting practices. So not too sure how many of our listeners kind of know who you are or what you do. Do you want to just give us, like, a quick background about yourself and 11FS?
Yeah, sure. Well, hopefully a bunch of you guys, if you've been to Xerocon, would have heard us, you know, shouting loudly in the corner about about what we do. But my name's David Breer. I'm the CEO of a company called 11FS. 11FS set out 3 years ago to try and rethink some of the things that have happened in financial services. So my background really, having worked in big management consultancies or big Indian offshoring companies or big banks and insurers, was just pretty underwhelmed, if I'm honest with you. You know, we're seeing people spend billions and billions of pounds and not really move forwards greatly. So how could we rethink that? You know, how could you align an organization to the incentives of the people who are actually they're serving rather than themselves? And it's gone rather well, I have to say. It's as we do say so ourselves, it's gone rather well in the last 3 years, which is good. We run our own podcast. We have a consultancy team. We don't really like the word consultancy because it generally sort of conjures up PowerPoint sort of merchants, which would have definitely not. We've built out a brand new core banking system called Foundry, which is going rather well, doing that in partnership with a big Norwegian bank called DNB. And we've done a plethora of other stuff in between now and then, which I sort of forget to think about, given the fact that it's the first day back after a holiday. But we're having real good time. You know, our whole narrative really is, we sort of think this whole digital banking thing's only 1% finished. And that with all of the regulatory change, with everything that's coming through, you know, whether it be things that are directly inside banking or whether it's things like making tax digital or, you know, whether it's actually just rethinking what banking is in a totality, that actually the next 99% of this journey is going to be far more entertaining and far more exciting than the percent that we're at now.
Yeah. So there's a couple of unique and different things about the way you guys approach things, right? So it's not just the services that you guys cover as, like, a service offering as your quote-unquote consultancy, but it's your go-to-market strategy. It's the way you distribute ideas. It's the culture that you have in your company. So where does that kind of stem from? Where does your service offering stem from?
I think culturally and, like, how we set up, it stems from working a bunch of companies that I didn't like very much. I kind of point back to I've learned way more from companies that weren't great, naming no names, than ones that were awesome. equally naming no names. And actually, like, what we've done, whether it's, you know, myself or people like, you know, from the original sort of founders, people like Jason Bates, who was one of the co-founders of Monzo and Starling, because he's greedy, or people like Simon Taylor, who was, you know, back in the day in Barclays, you know, kind of learning from all of these different experiences of what, you know, what we wanted to be when we were grown up, has sort of led to the creation of the company that we're at. You know, we got to a point, you know, I talk about this a lot, but we got to a point around about 2 years in where we were like, oh my God, this is going really well. Like, we got all kind of, you know, self-directed, and we were like, we need to, like, bottle this, because, like, you know, when there's, like, more people, like, how are we going to, like, make sure people understand this? And, you know, got very sort of self-reflective about what our strategy was. Lots of kind of like highfalutin conversations about the future of financial services and blah, 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 blah. But the reality is, it's just about unleashing talent. You know, that is our core strategy. How do we bring together the best people we can pull together, you know, industry gods and goddesses of the things that we're doing, and then just create the best environment for people to work, because it just makes business sense. You know, I kind of love the idea that people make a great culture because it's like a fun place to be. And it's like, yeah. Well, yes, definitely. But it just makes business sense. Like, if you pulled together like an amazing football team and then like had terrible facilities and training, like, they wouldn't win shit, right? So, you know, why do we perform at such a level? Like, why can we do all the things that we do? It's because our culture actually allows it to happen. And for me, that's, you know, the core principle of that is like, am I allowed to swear in this podcast? I can't tell.
You can. 100%. Yeah,
okay, so there's two kind of core principles, really. It's like, first one is like, don't be a dick.
Yeah.
Because actually, like, you can hire like really, really, really smart people who like self-revere their smartness way too much. And that just gets in the way of like everybody else being smart. Like, being smart is not like a one-upmanship thing. So actually, if you get that presumption that don't be a dick, everybody's got stuff that they're better at than you, and you might be better at somebody from something else, and that's cool. And then the second one is just trust. Like, how do you create an environment that actually trusts the people who come in to do the best thing that they can do because they're crazy passionate about something that we're doing? Like, Alex is like freakishly passionate about audio engineering, which is why he's an amazing audio engineer. Because yeah. If you're super, super passionate about the thing that you get weird about, then actually you're going to do it to the best of your ability. And if we hire the people who are the best at doing it and then allow them to do it to the best of their ability, then actually you can do amazing things. You know, we're at this era of fundamentally, like, digital now is a small team sport, right? So what we can do with 15 people, like 15 years ago would have took like 5,000 people in a big organization with change management and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But quantization of technology and, you know, really fintech showing us that actually small teams of highly motivated people can do amazing things. It's just meant that we've been able to kind of bring in this new way of thinking. And the great thing is, when you sort of go into a big organization and go, man, I think we can do this like way cheaper and way quicker, that, like, they're usually pretty receptive to that one, which is good for us.
I think we should end the podcast there.
I mean,
Matt, you had a few questions.
Well, there's so much I want to pick your brains out. Should we just dive straight into this?
Yeah, let's do it.
So obviously, let's go straight into the state of business today. You touched on MTD. Do I say it? Brexit? It's tricky times for businesses, right? What's your advice for navigating during these uncertain times?
Man, that's a toughie, right?
Yeah, start at the top.
I mean, the Brexit stuff, I mean, I just don't know. Like, the hard, you know, us, we're basically going, I mean, like, let's wait and see what happens. You know, there are people spending, you know, I think the government have said they've spent like, what, £4 or 5 billion trying to figure out, you know, 5 different 1,000 permutations of what might happen when something happens. But honestly, like, from where we're facing right now, this whole thing might get called off. Mm. Do you know what I mean? So as a small business, I'm like, well, if somebody tells me what's actually going to happen, then we'll make a plan to figure out how we navigate it. I think that's the issue is, at the moment, there's so much uncertainty in terms of actually what things like Brexit, the impact that Brexit will have, that actually, until we have some real clarity on what it is and how it'll impact us, then for us, it's just like, well, you know, most of our business, we do a lot of business in the UK, but we do a lot of business abroad as well. I can't see that being something that overnight a switch is flicked and we suddenly can't get to Brussels to do some work type thing. So,
yeah.
You know, let's see what happens, basically. On the MTD side of things, I think actually for, you know, the impact is different, again, depending on which organization you're actually in. Honestly, I think given the amount of coverage that Brexit's had, like the amount of places that I've seen Making Tax Digital really being advertised and explained to people, you know, that's really taken a backseat to Brexit, if I'm honest with you. And I said this to Gary the other day, it's like, I think the only place that I've actually seen Making Tax Digital really being advertised and sold as a great benefit is like Xero advertising. So like that's a great, you know, great amount of stuff on that you guys have been doing to kind of get it to the forefront of people's minds. But, you know, fundamentally, if you're not in a situation where you've fully embraced digital, then you now have no option to do than just to get on with it, really. You know, I know there are definitely going to be accounting firms out there who are, you know, still kind of pushing paper around a lot. But in that digital age where your customers are out there demanding these types of things, and now the, you know, literally the government is demanding that you do these things in a certain way, then actually, you know, you have no option other than sort of getting with the age, really.
Yeah. Well summarized. In terms of, you mentioned that you guys do business outside of the UK as well. Mm-hmm. Do you see that being more of like a risk mitigation strategy? I mean, I hate using buzzwords like that, but is it? Do you see yourselves, you know, if things do get really uncertain in the next kind of 6 to 12 months, how do you adapt and kind of take on that risk and then figure out how to mitigate against that? What are some of the strategies you guys use?
Definitely it's not a, from our perspective, it's not a sort of a risk management perspective. Like we're way more opportunistic than that, if I'm honest. Yeah. Like, you know, generally the company's gone really well, but we've been smart people making stuff up, quite frankly. So if I tried to like play some sort of master stroke that we've suddenly got 4 clients in South Africa for, you know, that wasn't how it happened. It was kind of down to like the DNA that we've kind of put out there from an 11FS's perspective is it's kind of been way more fishing than hunting to a certain degree. To your point, like we very much use similar things that you're doing with this podcast. Like we don't go and, you know, go to a million conferences, and we don't sort of send out lots of kind of like cold emails to people. We generally will put out a message through thought leadership or through blog posts or podcasts or, you know, all of the good stuff that we do, and then almost like wait for who comes back. You know, it's almost like the echo signal thing that we're doing to a certain degree, which kind of means from our perspective, the people that have come back to us have been, you know, Standard Charter in Hong Kong, and, you know, we've built a bank for NatWest in the UK called Metal. We're doing that out in the US with a big organization out there. We've had, you know, we have had 3 clients in South Africa, bizarrely, recently. So like we're doing it globally, but we're doing it globally because I actually think we, given the sort of message of change that we're kind of bringing about now, we really appeal to people who are kind of sick of doing it in the same way and not achieving the outcome. And that kind of early adopter, innovator space means you're kind of looking at like the top 2 or 3% of people who are really trying to do it differently globally. And that'll change as the market matures. But right now it has us flying out to all of the weird and wonderful places to do interesting things.
Awesome. That's so interesting, isn't it? And how do you go about preparing and future-proofing your business?
I think the, you know, future-proofing one, I think, is an element of, you know, it's a luxury of success, right? You know, future-proofing, when we first started out, was like making sure we didn't sign a crazy contract for a, you know, an office space that was like smaller than the meeting room we're in right now, right? And similarly, when you're talking about cash reserves for, you know, managing your cash flow as a business, then actually the dynamic of that changes quite dramatically when you're a 5-person organization or you're a 150-person organization. So for us, like risk is it's a business decision we're making daily, quite frankly. Like, do we create, you know, take on a new lease for premises? Do we, you know, buy a crazy piece of machinery that I want to print t-shirts and fucking stickers and whatnot? Like, I really want to do that because it would just take a lot of, like, Zoe's shaking her head right now, but I really want to do it. So, you know, all of these things day to day, we make decisions based on making sure we've got the available data and that actually we're not sort of putting the business at jeopardy for things that we're doing on a day-to-day basis. But we try and hold as much as possible the sort of tactics and the strategy of that to make sure that we're, you know, we're making strategic decisions daily.
Yeah. Awesome.
Do you ever find yourself getting into the challenge where you're so busy that you're working in your business and you never have time to step back and work on your business?
Sure.
I mean, we get this all the time that there are, you know, there are a percentage of accounting firms that we work with that want to change and they see that change is needed, but they just you know, time is obviously the biggest kind of blocker to that, I guess. It's just putting out fires, working with clients. It's just like, when do you ever get time to work on your business, and how do you make time for that?
So definitely that was a that was an issue to start with. We started the company with five people, so like literally everybody was working round the clock to both in and on the business, like creating processes, scaling processes. As we've become more successful, then essentially the investments that we make really are around de-risking. So, you know, how do you take people out of the risk category there? Because actually, if you've got, you know, five people who know everything about everything and all of the processes and all of the structures, then actually, you know, suddenly your greatest strength becomes your weakness. You know what I mean? So from our perspective, like the way I've mitigated it is, honestly, it's like good recruitment. Like, how do you bring in really, really good people who slowly but surely kind of reduce the need for you to be making decisions to the point now where, you know, as CEO, there's very few things that I need to really be dragged into, because we're in a situation where we've got a great CEO, a great COO, rather. I mean, if I do, you know, blow my own trumpet, we've got a great COO, we've got a great chief of staff, we've got a great deputy CEO, we've got, you know, really great people in all of the different key positions across our management team, and each of our business units run like individual businesses. So they have a separate P&L, they have a separate access to budgets, meaning that unless they deviate from where the, you know, the strategy is that we want to get to, then pretty much these guys are autonomous in terms of what they're doing. And that's been a real key for our kind of hyper growth, if I'm honest with you, because it allows us to isolate and de-risk each of those businesses by ensuring that actually if a bad decision's made in one of those businesses, it's not going to affect everything. So really, if I'm honest with you, it's just like bringing in good people and, you know, trusting them to do the right thing with the thing that you set up with them.
Yeah. I guess some businesses more than others, again, just bringing it back into what's happening in the accounting space right now, some businesses more than others feel like being able to go about their daily work or their daily business with their clients and things are being affected by MTD.
Sure.
It sounds a bit extreme, but that's the message that's coming out. It could be seen that because it's kind of a top-down approach to adopting technology and regulation. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Obviously, going digital is something we all believe in, but the way it's been handled and the way kind of coming from a top-down approach, what's your thoughts on that?
I mean, I'm not sure somebody would volunteer for doing it. You know, you're not going to get any companies coming along and going, do you know what, okay, I'll submit my taxes like four times a year instead of once type thing, because they like love doing taxes so much, right? But I do think that actually with that push will become, you know, a whole raft of de-risking for those organizations, because it's going to be way more likely people are going to have all of their their accounts in order, really. And being in that situation, again, either through ensuring that from a receipting perspective, or ensuring that just purely that the accounts are in order in terms of the submissions that need to be made, like more regularity around that surely can only be a good thing for those businesses. Now, again, I don't think people would have volunteered for it in the first place, but many, you know, very often people kind of need to be sort of shoved into doing things that are slightly better for them than it would have been if they weren't doing it. You know, if you look at open banking, that's probably another good example where, you know, for anybody who doesn't know, listening, open banking requires big banks, in fact, any bank, to expose an API to allow people, third parties, to make transactions if they're authorized by the account holder, which doesn't sound very interesting, but it actually is such a revolution within the industry that will allow so many different things to kind of come to market. So would the big banks, would any bank really have volunteered for that? No. But actually, ultimately, it's going to be so much better for the customer at the end of this, because it's going to spur so many different innovations. I see Making Tax Digital in that space, because I think ultimately it'll end up being a bit of a dawn of change for how people interact with their accounts. And if I'm honest with you, I think accounting has been such a dark art because people don't understand it. You know, to your point around sort of working in or on the business, well, when you start a company, you don't start it with a, you know, I'm going to make sure my spreadsheet is so perfectly placed in an order and, you know, all of these things are wonderfully lined up. Like, people do it because they're passionate about a business. You know, they want to make cupcakes or whatever it is that they want to do in terms of their business. So kind of all of this other stuff, like the stuff that we all get excited about and the people who listen to this podcast get excited about, like, customers just don't care about. That's an inconvenience for them fulfilling their dream, which is like making cupcakes, right? So how do we get that thing out out of the way as much as possible? And how do we allow them to focus on the stuff that they're really, really good at, really, really passionate about? Well, you know, digital and the commoditization around the processes and submissions and these types of things is just the perfect way of doing it, because, you know, it means that actually as accountants, you get very clean, repeatable processes and structures and capabilities to actually allow people to access these things. And from an end consumer perspective, you get to focus more on the stuff that you're passionate about and the stuff than the stuff that you're not. So really, I think, I don't think people would have volunteered for it, but definitely I think everybody benefits.
Yeah,
definitely. So one thing we definitely wanted to get your thoughts on was the competitive landscape in business. So incumbents versus startups, large versus small. Mm-hmm. So in your opinion, when does an incumbent know, or how does an incumbent know when it's being threatened?
When they're in trouble.
When they're in trouble.
I mean, so do you mean in like the banking sense, or do you mean in the? So I think it's difficult because like usually the point where you realize danger is there, it's like too late, right?
Yeah.
You know, like you're in the sea and you see a shark, like you're shit out of luck at that point, right? There's, you know what I mean? Like there's probably nothing you can do at that stage, but then like I don't know, swim faster than the dude next to you, right? So and that's actually the situation that many of the banks kind of find themselves in is like actually since the financial crisis, what we've seen is a wholesale fundamental shift in actually how the banking industry works in the UK. You know, we've seen a dramatic move from protectionism for the largest of the organizations and, you know, looking at bailouts of, you know, Lloyds and RBS and all of these things that have happened to a shift towards the creation of competition. So this is about how does, you know, the PRA, how does the FCA, how does, you know, all of the kind of bodies that are kind of working alongside the government and the regulators, how do they create competition in the market and allow that to flourish? Which ultimately, if I'm honest with you, is where, you know, fintech has come from, because there's all of that opportunity to come. And whether it's, you know, retail banking, the kind of explosion that we've seen with Revoluts and Monzos and Starlings of the world, or, you know, whether it's now what we're seeing in, you know, in the business sense with people like Tide or, you know, Coconut or all of these guys coming through. But we're even seeing in like asset management now, you know, asset management, trade finance, you know, the kind of stocks and shares side of things as well. You know, every slice of banking is up for disruption. And ultimately, again, you know, the people who benefit most from this, like fintech companies definitely benefit because like you can't go more than about 3 hours without somebody getting like a £1 billion valuation now or raising £50 million or something. But ultimately the people who really benefit from this is the customer. You know, you get real competition because, you know, somebody like Tide can create an account and have you using it in like 5 minutes. Whereas, you know, Santander, when we opened it up for the 11FS one, it took me like 12 weeks. Like I had to go to a branch like 4 times, you know, like it's crazy what you have to do to get a business current account sometimes. So yeah, I think the kind of competition is definitely sort of raising. I think when do the incumbents know that they're being threatened? Fundamentally, I think it's when they start seeing customers leave. Mm. The hard thing with that though is both in the business sense and in the retail sense, you know, people don't leave straight away. You know, what we're sort of seeing is, you know, people using Starling or Monzo or, you know, Tide or Coconut or something along those lines is like a secondary account. And actually at the point where people leave is when there's no chance of getting them back.
Yeah. When it's too late, essentially, like you said.
But I think the big incumbents though have really relied on, you know, they've rested on the laurels for a long time. You know, they haven't needed to kind of keep up with the innovations. They haven't really needed to focus on kind of anything other than just providing a real basic account. You know, in many instances, they had the cheek of charging you for a current account that was worse than a retail current account, which makes no sense at all, you know. And at best, they were kind of providing something reasonably sort of average. But I think a lot of them are waking up to it now. You know, you're seeing big changes that obviously what we built with Metal, with NatWest, you know, this is a big reaction to the competitive landscape because it's about not just about creation of a proposition, but actually fundamentally rethinking the culture and the technology within that proposition. You know, moving from, you know, once every couple of months release cycle to, you know, 100 times a week. And you only do that by fundamentally changing the talent and the culture within that organization. But we're seeing Santander do it. We're seeing Barclays do it. You know, kind of all of the big banks, I think, are you know, similar to what I said earlier on about the ability to do nothing has kind of gone away. Just kind of providing that old capability and, you know, hoping for the best is definitely not going to work in the new world.
Yeah. Just want to, like, extend on that point that you mentioned. Like, I absolutely agree with you that there are so many slices of banking that are ripe for disruption and are being disrupted. What's your take on, like, other industries that are ripe for disruption? Like, what do you find interesting outside of banking in terms of, like, yeah, other industries that are just being shaken up or you think could be shaken up?
I mean, pretty much any place where you go and look at a collection of a small number of very large organizations is kind of ripe for disruption, really. What you generally find is, like, the things that protect them at some point turn on them, which is definitely what we've kind of seen in banking. Yeah. You know, if you look at things like MNOs, you know, mobile network operators, you know, for a long period of time, they were really, really heavily protected because actually getting into it was difficult. You know, for banks, you know, capital investment required to start a bank was always the thing that was the most, you know, heavily protecting them because it was just too bloody expensive to start a bank. With regulatory changes, actually allowed them to kind of come and get into that space in the same way as with network operators, it allowed them to kind of come and get into that space as well. So, like, honestly, anywhere where you see a few large incumbents who are probably not keeping up with the times, which sadly, if I'm honest with you, is pretty much every industry. There are not many industries where it's like a sad state of affairs, but there's not many industries where success doesn't breed apathy. And almost like the things that kind of made you successful in the first place are usually the things that are the inhibitors for allowing competition to kind of come after you in the end. So if I'm honest with you, I'd look at, like in the UK, like somebody like Sky, like the fact that we haven't had a really large organization kind of come after that with, you know, competing with those guys in that space. You know, I think I can only presume the fact that the UK market's not big enough to kind of go after for that space, because definitely if you look at the US model, there's, you know, many different networks providing many different things that actually you could think would be an opportunity in this market as well. But really, any space where there's a big incumbent organization where you can be the competitor and come after them, you know what I mean? Pepsi did it to Coke, right? Pepsi is still doing pretty well out of that scenario. So, yeah. But yeah, lots of them. For me, honestly, like I generally don't look too much further than financial services, just because, like, I don't have any more hours in the day, quite frankly. but you know, I think off the back of what we've seen in the retail and the business sense, definitely like asset management, I think is going to be big. And investment banking. Yeah. I think the sort of potential for investment banking, I think, is going to be massive, and the insurance space as well. Mm-hmm. I think the sort of commoditization that we've seen around insurance products is starting to kind of mean that there's just zero differentiation between any of those players. And actually, what we can do to create truly differentiated insurance products, really sort of leveraging all of the intelligence that you can kind of bring around data and the fact that technology is at the point now where, you know, anything can provide, you know, literally I found out yesterday my watch can do an ECG. Like, it can literally monitor my heart rate and tell me if I have a heart problem, which is both amazing and terrifying at the same time.
100%.
You know, that 30 seconds while it's doing the test is like the tensest 30 seconds that you've ever experienced. Because one time I'm going to do it and it's going to like go phone a like an ambulance or something. You know? But now I have that ability because my watch is that smart. You know? But I was kind of saying, it's like, I don't think it's just industries. I think it's like slices of industries. You know, it's amazing what looks like a surefire bet as, like, you know, the most important thing that you're ever going to be doing, until then it's not. You know, if you look at like the card industry, you know, this weekend, managed to leave my wallet in London, which I was like, well, screwed now, you know, like this is going to be really difficult. I literally paid for everything for the entirety of the weekend just on my watch, using Apple Pay, because I can now. And even in Norfolk where I live, like all of the, you know, the terminals accept it. Like, people look at you like you're doing some sort of witchcraft type thing. Like, I'm literally trying to steal these things. But no, you can do all of this stuff now. So, you know, a couple of years ago, you would have thought the people making plastic cards would be in a business forever. and you can see a space in the next like 2 or 3 years where that won't exist before again. You know, similarly, like the people who were creating, you know, physical money would have thought they would have been on like a surefire thing forever because, like, well, money's not going to go out of fashion. But now, you know, a cashless society means that actually we probably don't need that skill set anymore. Do you know what I mean? It's like people don't need to make fucking bows and arrows now type thing because there's like different things. So so I think it's more likely that we're going to see slices of industries really drastically changing. But if you kind of look at any industry where they've got loads of customers and loads of money, their sort of ability to do something about it is usually in their own, you know, their own hands, really. You know, like, it's usually apathy or just believing that you're, like, you know, really fancy about doing stuff that actually leads to people not making changes, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And there's part one. Now, part two is going to come in just 2 weeks, so we haven't got long to wait for some awesome content. So we'll see you then.